I am here with Carol Borden, and most of this show, Good Dogs, is about training tips and ideas about how to get dogs to be the very best companions they can be. Carol raises extraordinary dogs from pre-birth, she owns their moms and dads, to their whelping, to their early days and weeks and months of life, and then they're trained to be paired with people who have medical needs for them. By the way, all of this is completely free to the people. So if you ever wonder, hey, is this show just an advertisement? Yeah, it's an advertisement for how incredibly amazing Carol Borden and Guardian Angels Medical Service dogs are. But something occurred in a conversation with a woman named Sindor Pangal, who wrote a book about what dogs know. And she works with street dogs in Bangalore, India. She sees dogs from a very, very different perspective than those of us who have owned dogs or dogs who live in homes. And one of the things that she brought up is the lack of free will that we give our dogs. And it's been on my mind a lot. And I know, Carol, that you're going to have some really interesting comments to make about the idea, just the very simple idea, that dogs are taught by us for no really good reason to sit before everything, sit before this, sit before that, sit before the other thing, which to dogs who are older and have any kind of arthritis, which all older dogs have, or dogs like Maisie, my dog, who has one blown disc and one bulging disc and two repaired ACLs, sitting and standing up again is actually not just difficult, it's painful. So why do I ask her to sit if she's standing perfectly politely waiting for whatever comes next? I'd like to talk philosophically with you about what do you think about dogs having free will and choice and choosing to do things with us and for us, as opposed to having it demanded of them in a kind of a strict authoritarian way, which is how most of us are told we're supposed to train our dogs.
Well, I'm glad we're having this conversation. First of all, part of what I teach in my college curriculum is that we as human beings have dragged dogs through generations of civilizations into man's world. We have taken them completely away from where they originated from with cavemen. And along the way, we have completely disregarded their natural instincts to sniff behind.
Yes.
That is a normal dog greeting.
Yes.
But we find it distasteful to drink out of mud puddles.
Yes.
But we find that distasteful to eat their own excrement, which, again, we find disgusting. But there are reasons behind all of these different things that dogs do that humans don't like. So that's the first thing I want to talk about, is how we demand that they forget about being a dog because we want them to be something different.
Yes.
And therefore, we make no allowances for naturally occurring behaviors. The second piece of what I want to talk about is something I remind my trainers of. You know, we train a little bit differently than a lot of service dog organizations that are very command-based. You know, our dogs have to understand commands, certainly, but we also need to separate when it's a power trip versus something important they need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're talking about, making a dog sit for everything, isn't that just a power trip on our part?
Yes.
Hey, look what I made my dog do.
That's
look,
right.
My dog's listening to me. I can make him do anything. Listen, I can teach a dog to do anything within a matter of minutes that I want him to do. But why? Why would I ask him to do something that's uncomfortable, that's contradictory to being a dog, when I can get so much more from that dog if I learn what's in his head?
Mm-hmm.
That is the number one basis for really communicating with a dog and getting the maximum from that relationship, by understanding how a dog thinks, putting yourself on that level instead of trying to force the dog to come to your level. Human beings are supposed to be the most intelligent species, right?
So theoretically,
why are we expecting this dog to come up to our level? No, that's backwards. We should bring our mind to their level if we really want to have full understanding of how to communicate with them and ask them to do the things that are important We need to have an understanding for the things that come naturally, and how do we modify those things so that they can live in our households comfortably without totally removing being a canine from their mind.
Yeah, right? You say that beautifully. And of course, safety is important. We all know, you know, you got to have the come or the recall or the wait or the stop if a dog could be in a situation where it's going to get run over. I mean, that's really the worst of all possible things, I think, that we all might dread. But this is about something more subtle and philosophical. And you say it so well. And when I read this book, which is a wonderful book, I'm going to send you a copy of it. You'll really like it. It made me feel like crying because I thought, wow, all my life I thought, gee, I'm so dog-centric and I've always, you know, like felt one with my dog kind of thing and given each of them space to be their own individual personality and character. But I still believed in this idea. It wasn't the alpha dog idea of training, but it's more that I've got to be the boss. Someone's got to be the mom. Someone has to put their foot down. Someone has to, you know, draw a line in the sand and have boundaries. And the way you make a dog be that compliant, obedient kind of guy or gal is that you're always checking in on them. Did you lie down when I told you? Did you sit before I gave you the treat? But what if she's standing really calmly and patiently? Maisie will do this. She'll stand by the treat jar as long as it takes for me to go, okay, you feel you need a biscuit. Mm-hmm. What about people who say, but she didn't do anything for it? Hey, you know what she did for it? She didn't jump up on the counter and knock the treat jar over. Okay, and she could have done that. She waited politely and patiently, way beyond, you know, some obedience trial in a dog show, the downstay for 5 minutes. This dog would just wait and wait. I had a Weimaraner, Lulu. She would stand in front of all of my houses, have always had many dog beds in many permutations. Many of them have covers that can come off so they can be washed. If there were any wrinkles on any of the dog beds, wrinkle in the cover of any amount, Princess and the Pea, Lulu wouldn't get on it. She would stand there. And in the beginning, when I first adopted her, I thought, oh, was this dog having a senior moment? She was, you know, 2 years old. She would wait and you'd think, okay, and you'd go over and you'd look at her and you smooth out the bed. And this is really true. Smooth it out with your hand. She would say thank you and get on it. But she didn't whine or moan or even just lie on the floor near it. She really did want to lie on one of those comfortable dog beds, but it wasn't smooth. So how can we not admire and appreciate a dog that waits for you to figure them out, exactly as you're saying? They have the patience to think, if I stand here long enough, she's going to do a mind meld. She's going to figure this out. You talk
and
about...
And your dog was...
Yeah,
your dog was communicating with
totally.
You. And that's where I say the humans
yes,
have to be smart enough
exactly.
to recognize that communication.
And when you say come down to their level, even their eye level, what are they looking at? What is it that's interesting them? Not to mention their nose, other dogs' butts, or the leavings of other dogs' pee and poo. People yank them away. It's like so important to get that information. It's also interesting.
Yep.
It's like, you know, it isn't just reading P-mail for the heck of it. It stimulates your dogness. You talked in one of our early puppy series about leash training and how to train a dog to be on a leash or to heel. And I remember being absolutely blown away. You talked about all of your dogs being taught to heel without a leash. And that is kind of really what we're talking about. How do you engage with a dog so they understand that standing close to you while walking and stopping when you walk is how you want to be with them, and it's going to work for them too? And I don't know how you came to that, but no one else is thinking about dog training the way you do, Carol, and your dogs have to perform life-saving procedures many times a day. Many times a day, whether it's a diabetic or a seizure alert dog, whether it's a PTSD dog, keeping someone from down spiraling or up spiraling into anxiety attacks, panic attacks, depression. You must be very much in the mind frame that understanding that dog and working with them, not forcing them to do anything, is the only way to get true partnership. Is that
Absolutely.
About right?
Yes, and again, it goes back to understanding how to communicate with your dog, and part of what I teach is how did man and dog become such great partners, you know, back in ancient times, caveman times? It's because if you understand the language of both of them, and the fact that, yes, while man evolved into having these intellectual conversations, at that time, caveman was not that evolved, and neither was the dog, and the dog has not evolved to the level that we have. They couldn't speak then. They don't speak now. But like any animal, they all have their certain vocalizations. They have body language, and that is what is critically important. So in my opinion, a leash, a clicker, a collar, any other number of man-made items for a dog are exactly that. They are man-made tools to control. Yes. And I don't believe that those are necessary. Now, legally, a service dog does have to have a collar and leash on or be under total control. And so we call them our legally required ornaments. Because that's all they are for our dogs. Because we don't put collars and leashes on our dogs for many, many weeks, and they already know how to heel, how to sit, how to down, how to recall, how to do a couple of little service dog items before we ever put a collar and leash on them. And the way we do that is by making ourselves the higher value target. We do use treats a lot.
Yep.
We do luring, you know, getting them to come into the correct position, whether it's heeling, sitting, down, whatever. And they get rewarded every time they do what we're asking correctly. And we're asking it all through body language. And it's to the point that any one of my dogs, I can just signal them. I don't have to say a word.
Right.
And I am able to get them to do whatever I need. I was teaching a class one time, and I had several students, and they were kind of like raising an eyebrow to my take on this. And I said, okay, I'm going to prove it to you. Right now, I'm going to go around the room, and I'm going to ask every dog to do something that it has never done before, and I'm not going to say a word to it. I am just going to manage it through body language. And I did. And I was successful.
No
and I
kidding.
Taught every dog in there to do something just through body language and asking them in a positive way without ever saying a word.
Wow.
Because think about it. It's like if you go into a room full of people who speak a foreign language that you don't understand, you immediately feel like an outcast. You don't know what they might be yelling at you, pushing you, talking to you, expecting an answer. You can get that in the inflection of their voice, but you still don't know what it is they're asking.
Right.
Put yourself in your dog's paws. You know, they are in the same boat. And so it's very important to find a way to communicate with them that is meaningful. And once you have that, then the whole world opens up. Now they are ready to listen. They're ready to be right by your side. They get it. They want to be with you. They're very willing creatures. They very much want to please. They don't do things wrong on purpose. They do it because humans have not communicated clearly or consistently as a rule.
So it's left them kind of bouncing off the walls, not knowing, am I supposed to sit? Am I good? Am I bad? Is their tone of voice mean that they're happy or they're mad or they're sad? What did I do wrong? And how did I do it wrong? There's always this sense of being judged or graded that people are told is how to communicate with a dog. And I just think it's really important in a philosophical sense in listening to the various iterations of this show, but also in looking at and dealing with your own dogs, to think about them as individuals and their expression of the things that matter to them and let them do more of it. Don't make them do less of it to prove you're in charge. We know you're in charge. Mm-hmm. Of course we're in charge. People in charge should not have to prove it all the time. And those that are dependent on us, whether they're children or dogs or other people, employees, we don't have to prove our might all the time. Sometimes there's ways of getting to a conclusion or a resolution that can be driven by the personality and proclivities of that individual dog. There's not only one way to get there. So if you have multiple dogs, you know this, that they have different personalities, and one is not more stubborn, one is not more willful. They're just not understanding in the same way what you want done as the one who seems more compliant, which some people that are thinking philosophically about dogs might say, the dog is basically given up. They've given up their dogness. They've given up their ability to have free will and do it their way or express themselves without being chastised. I think it's really important that as we talk in this show about how to make your dogs better citizens, that you need to be a better guardian of your dog. But truly, you know, your company is called Guardian Angels. We need to be guardians of dogs, and that means respecting their dogness and having more respect for the way they want to go on a walk or the way they want to lie in your room. You don't have to make them get up and come over here and sit down and then get a treat to prove you were in charge. You can just leave them lying down where they are. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just think Absolutely. That it's really important that we get that message across. We need to have a much different point of view about the dogs we live with and enhance the relationship. As Carol said in the beginning, you want to get the most out of that relationship, you got to let go. You have to let go of your human dominance and the idea that you're the one in charge and that the whole thing's a circus and you can get your dog to jump through a flaming hoop. They really don't need to, okay? Just let them be dogs and work with it around who they are and what's good for them. Thank you, Carol, for the wonderful wisdom you bring into the world, especially with dogs who are saving lives every day, that you still tell everyone that they need to be respected for who they are too.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tracy.